of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Seed of wisdom, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Our present class is on the gift of divine grace. One of the many limitations of the English-speaking language is that most Americans, pardon me, most English-speaking people, except what they may have memorized from classes in religion, have only a faint idea of the meaning, the in-depth meaning of the words that we use here in English. In the languages outside of English, the word grace means love. And not just ordinary love, but the kind of love that God has for His rational, both angelic and human creatures. As I've said more than once, at home with my mother, we never spoke English. My background is Slav. And the Slav word for grace is milost. M-I-L-O-S-T. Slight variance among the different Slav languages. And milost in the Slav languages means love. That's what grace is. Grace is love. Whose love for whom? God's love for His rational creatures. We begin then by asking ourselves, by way of introduction, why a series of lectures on the Holy Spirit? Many reasons, but especially two. The modern, what a cheap word, preoccupation with material things. As I've said so far so many times, the standard English word for something which has no meaning is nonsense. Either you can perceive it with the senses, or it is, well, what else? Nonsense. Want to tell someone something is not important? Tell the person, it is immaterial to me. Or we say, it does not matter. Is God, as God, sensibly perceptible? No. Is God, as God, in any notice, I'm still using the English language, in any sense? Our English language is profoundly, profoundly materialistic. Do you hear me? And that is why, as I'm sure I've said before, my first 15 years in teaching my own Jesuits their theology all my classes were only in Latin. Pardon the expression, quantum gaudium, what joy. The last 10 years, all my classes had to be in English. I'd use the Latin term, quanta mortificatio, what a mortification. Conversation is communication of spirit with spirit. Do you hear me? But what a difference it makes. What words we use to the person or persons listening to us, we'll understand what we are saying. Second reason. The phenomenal activity of the evil spirit. And as we take up the subject of demonology as a science in our second course, we begin to see how deeply every massive cosmic evil in the world today, on a scale never before known, I repeat, in human history, is demonic. Anyone who does not know that abortion is demoniacal does not understand the ABCs of Christianity. For the first course, then, there will be 8 lectures on the grace of God, which is, and typical, is the communication of God's love. The word is missing. Please put it in. Is the communication of God's love. God has 2 definitions. God is love, and God is loving. God as love is a perfect definition of the Holy Trinity. But God is loving is a description of His showing His love toward us. And the manifestation, the showing, the communication of that love is divine grace. Our first lecture, therefore, will be on the meaning of divine grace. Can I be heard in the back of the lounge? Can I? Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4 parts to today's lecture on divine grace. And notice our focus is on the meaning of divine grace. Christianity is the religion of grace. The moment you say that, you are synthesizing the whole of our Christian faith. What do we mean when we say that our destiny is to see God face to face? A number of questions, and just shake your heads this way or that way, or my hearing aid is down, so you have to shout real loud. Want to say something? did God have to create anything? Did God have to create the human race?
No.
And with the human race, did God have to create me? The first act of gratitude we should make to God and make a daily is thank God that we are not nothing. This, in one sentence, is a synthesis of the theology of St. John of the Cross. When we say in the Creed, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth, creation by definition means what is created was nothing. If the verb is not good theology, to say that something is nothing is cheating theologically. You don't use a verb to describe what does not exist. First question. Next question. When God chose to create the human race, could God have created a human race whose destiny would have been to be happy? But to be happy without seeing God. I repeat. Could God have created a human race whose destiny would have been happiness, but without seeing God? Thanks for some of you shaking your heads, because this is telling me there's a reason for my coming here. The question that I've just asked, could God have created us without giving us the destiny of being happy, but without a destiny, without seeing Him? Millions, hundreds of millions, calling themselves Christians, believe exactly that. That God did create the human race, whose destiny is not to see God. Over the years, in teaching, as I've said so many times, in 6 Protestant seminaries, I told them, and I do, is that you poor Protestants, you believe that God had to create the human race, which He did. That's not true. God could have created a human race whose destiny would not have been to see God. We begin to understand the meaning of grace when we start understanding that grace is that which we have absolutely and utterly no claim to. And what is the destiny to which we do not have any claim? A lifetime of living a holy life gives no creature the claim on seeing God. Consequently, since our destiny is to see God face to face, God had to do more than just create us or the angels as intelligent, created beings. God had to elevate, raise both the angels and us to a level to which no creature could possibly have a claim. What did God do? God created both the angels and us that we might share in God's own divine, eternal, Trinitarian happiness. God made us to see Him as God sees Himself, and thus to enjoy God, we as creatures, but as far as it is possible with God. He raised the human race to a level of existence with a destiny to see God, I repeat, as God sees Himself. That's what the word vision and beatific vision means. And the adjective beatific means that we are destined for a happiness which is not the happiness that a creature by any possible claim could expect. It is a beatitude which participates in, shares in, the very happiness of God Himself. And that is what we mean by grace. Grace, and we've got 8 lectures to cover the subject. Grace is that which we as human beings in no sense possess of ourselves as creatures. Grace is that which God had to, out of His love for us, give us over and above our human nature. As we call it, supernatural, which entitles us to seeing God face to face when our body dies. Today is Sunday. Yesterday morning I finished my annual 8-day retreat. A lot of praying. I thought I'd share this with you. There is nothing, and the word is nothing, in this world that has any meaning, zero, any meaning, except when our bodies die, that our souls can possess the grace of God. Everything else, and now the word is correct, everything else is nonsense. We go on. Grace is the means of reaching heaven. Without God's grace, no one reaches heaven. I've said more than once, favorite abbreviation is N plus G equals H. Nature plus grace equals heaven. And hear it. Everything in our lives is intended by God. Everything is intended by God to be a channel of grace. Everything, everything. Needless to say, not all graces are pleasant. Question. Just shake your heads. Either this way or this way. Is everything which is pleasant necessarily enjoyable? In other words, can we enjoy what is not pleasant? We better. Otherwise, we won't get to heaven. Do you hear me? That's what the cross is all about. As we've said so many times, it is God crossing our wills and does God cross our wills and tell us, I don't just say, take it. Does God cross our wills and tell us, enjoy it? Yes. And we go in the spiritual life in the measure that we learn that we can enjoy what we don't like. Am I still making sense?
Yes.
We go on. The importance of understanding the meaning of grace. Why did God become man? God became man to restore grace to the human race. Was in Detroit while lecturing in Ann Arbor. More than one person told me they have attended baptismal ceremonies in which the priest baptizing a child would tell the parents, the sponsors, and the guests, you know, we no longer believe that baptism restores the sanctifying grace which we do not have when we are born. You may be surprised at what I'm going to say. A priest who believes that if the baptism depended exclusively on his faith, their child might not be validly baptized. The main reason for baptism is to recover the grace that our first parents lost when they sinned. That is Catholic doctrine. And that, as I think I've said to some of you on some occasion, when I was told by a bishop, of course I wouldn't dare identify him, we organized a home study program under orders of the Holy See, and unbeknownst to me, a priest was hired who did not believe in original sin being a loss of divine grace. We must fire this priest from the faculty, resisted by the members of the board of directors, and then the bishop called me up. Do you still insist that priest not be hired? Of course. He cannot have a heretic on the faculty. I was told, as I'm sure we remember some of you, John, your problem is you have a fixation on dogma. Either you believe that baptism restores the grace we need to reach heaven, or the person is not a Catholic. Grace is the means of reaching heaven. Without grace, no heaven. And God became man to restore this grace. The whole meaning behind Christ's life, and especially his death on Calvary, is to restore grace to the human race. Christianity is meaningless, utterly meaningless, unless we know and believe that God became man to restore what we need to reach our heavenly destiny, which is divine grace. This is the reason why Christ founded the church. Say that again. The main reason why Christ founded the church is to be the remembers. If I start this sentence, who could finish it? The Catholic Church is defined by the Second Vatican Council as the universal sacrament. Who can finish the sentence? Universal sacrament of salvation, which means the universal sacrament of grace, without which there is no salvation. No Protestant who is sober and sane and understands Protestantism believes what I've just said. As I've said so many times, the United States is profoundly Protestantized. Shall I coin a word that Protestantification of our nation is the main problem to which the Catholic Church is going. You don't close 42 parishes in the Archdiocese of Detroit or 62 in the Archdiocese of Chicago without a reason. This is the reason. In other words, the church is indispensable for the communication of the grace that Christ, of course, died on the cross to merit. But what a difference. What a difference to have merited, to have won, to have earned. Shall I coin a word? A warehouse of grace. Unless we have access to that grace. And we have access to that grace which Christ merited on Calvary through the church which he founded. There's a reason for the sacraments. The sacrament issued by Christ to confer grace. And as I've told so many people, and I'm sure more than once, yourselves, the church keeps insisting and repeating on the need for the frequent, get that word, frequent reception and watch it, of the sacraments, plural. What are they? The Eucharist and the sacrament of confession. Why? Because we need the grace. How kind of God. How thoughtful of Him. And we are in sin. And the more deeply we're steeped in sin, you don't even have to be a Christian to believe this. I've heard it Sigmund Freud more than once. There is no emotional disturbance. There is no mental disorder. There is no lack of peace, barring always a person who is, well, out of possession of his mind totally. In all other cases, 50 years plus now, let's see, 74 plus 7 is 81 days. 50 years plus 71 days in the priesthood has taught me. Anxiety we experience are the result of sin. And people can be, how well I know, freed from sin, but stupidly. This is, we'll see, one of the favorite temptations of the devil, to trouble them, make them anxious. Why? Because, oh, they have been forgiven their sins in the past. They are wanting in what? They're wanting in trust and hope in God's mercy. They are therefore unhappy. I don't want to say too much at the beginning of the course. There's so much to be learned. Only those people experience peace who are united with God by His grace. We have only as much peace as we have grace. As well, over the years, I've counseled so many psychologists and psychiatrists. Why is it important to understand the meaning of grace? Because that is the purpose of prayer. Who could finish this sentence from the Old Testament? This is God speaking. I love those who love me. Grace is the experience of God's love in our lives. And we'll experience as much of His love as we love Him. I hope I'm clear. To be loved by God, But Father, what are you saying? Does not God love everyone? Yes, He does. Does God love everyone equally? Absolutely no. How do you grow in being loved by God? By loving Him. The more you love Him, the more He will love you. And God loving us is another name for grace. The importance of understanding the meaning of grace. This is the basic distinctiveness of Roman Catholic Christianity. Notice I distinguish various forms of Christianity. Over 4,000 Protestant denominations in the world. Hundreds of divisions of the Orthodox churches separated from the Roman Catholic Church. The single basic distinctive feature of Roman Catholic Christianity is what the Roman Catholic Church teaches about grace. That is why over the years, teaching my own Jesuits their theology across the whole spectrum, the one course that I found most satisfying and told my students, be sure to grasp this, is the theology of grace. Because grace synthesizes and summarizes everything else we believe. Thus, among the Protestants, the poor dears, they will, of course, in their books in English, will speak of grace. Books in French talk about grace. Books in German talk about Gnade. Grace, all over Protestantism. Oh, but not the grace of the Roman Catholic Church. Hear it. No one can be saved without God's grace. But once we have reached the age of reason, where the Catholic Church calls the age of discretion, will grace alone save us? No. What power do we have which we must use to cooperate with grace? Our what?
Will.
Our will. We better be all pro-choice people. But what a difference whose will we choose to follow. Is it our will or God's will? And a perfect synonym for God's will in our lives is grace. Do you still hear me? Nothing in God's providence ever happens. That verb, as I've said so many times, is not in God's vocabulary. Happen. Everything is from all eternity planned by God. And what we need is a light to see God behind what we did not expect. To see God in everything which we do not like. You mean God sends us things we don't like? Stupid, of course. Can we, however, love what we don't like? You better say yes. And finally, on the importance of understanding the meaning of grace. It is the highest manifestation of God's love. Grace. And this, hear it, is the highest manifestation of our love for others. The greatest thing we can give anyone is grace. It means a grace. In fact, whatever we give anyone which is not a channel of grace is not an act of charity. Do you still hear me? My only problem when I use these statements, I've got one big problem. The standard course in grace that I taught is 2 semesters. 15 weeks each semester. 3 one-hour classes each week. That means 15 times, well, times 3 is 45 hours, right? Times 2 is 90 hours. You know, I'm trying to cover the same ground in, well, about maybe 10 or 11 hours. Gotta leave some time for questions. The only authentic practice of charity we can give to anyone is by being a channel of grace to that person. You know what? I don't say volumes. What libraries are hidden behind those words I've just shared with you. So far, number 2. Number 3. A standard definition of grace. Grace may be defined as the supernatural gift of God freely bestowed on rational creatures to enable them to reach heaven. Every word there deserves at least an hour of explanation. First of all, it's a gift. A gift from God. But notice, it's not the ordinary gift that God gave us when He created us. God could have created a rational, both angelic and human world, and not have destined either the angels or human beings for a share in His own infinite Trinitarian happiness. He chose to do so. So it's a supernatural gift. In other words, grace belongs to God by His nature. It is given to us as something which is beyond and above our nature. And that is why, please God, my sharing with you the insights that now over these years the Lord has given me on the meaning of grace, I can tell you your lives will be changed. to see God's grace in everything, in everyone, in every situation, and to welcome that grace as a gift from God. No matter how unpleasant, humanly speaking, that grace may be. But I repeat, and how we need, my dear friends in Christ, how we need to learn this. We're not in heaven yet. We're still on the way. Yesterday at 1 o'clock, I offered Mass for Mother Teresa. She may be in heaven, but knowing my theology as well as I do, we should pray for the repose of her soul. Having spoken to Calcutta both yesterday and today, we'll be going to Calcutta either Wednesday evening or Thursday morning of this week. And I was told the stadium will be used. And the lowest figure now is 140,000 people will be attending Mother Teresa.